Do you like film? Do you like comedy? Do you like your childhood memories?
One more take?
Yeah.
Lewis and Pete's bad nostalgia film club.
Each episode sees comedian Lewis Charlesworth and Pete Phillipson revisit a classic childhood film through the eyes of an adult to see how messed up it truly is. Be it Back to the Future for its story of incest, Mrs. Doubtfire for its tale of the creepy cross-dressing father babysitter, or Home Alone with its sinister home invasion toddler torture nightmare.
Bad nostalgia.
The Disney series.
I do that every time. I'm even annoying myself. I must be annoying them. But
I like the way you went for a yo.
Every time I wait for it, I anticipate it, and then I hear it. Bad nostalgia, and I'm ready to fly.
It's your own fault, mate, for putting the Disney series in. Before we started this series, you were like, "I've put a little extra bit in, mate." I say the Disney series. It's ruined this series, to be honest.
It's ruined the series. It means we get off to a really sluggish start.
Yeah.
And I can only apologise to you, myself, and the world.
And Gav. Yeah.
And everyone in Germany, France, and Ghana.
Absolutely.
After Lion King last week, people, we had a couple of listeners and downloads in Ghana. They obviously saw the Lion King, thought, oh, I'm going to leave the impression there. And then I just downloaded it. So there we go. Keep downloading. Keep following us at Bad Nostalgia. Go for it, mate. I'm really, really enjoying the series.
I am, mate.
I say it every time, but I mean it. I really, truly mean it.
Yeah, man.
And I just can't stop listening to it. It's turning me into, it indirectly turned me into a really narcissistic person. I'm not vain. You know, I could go a full day without looking in the mirror. I'm not into myself like that, but I can't stop listening to the show. I listened to it the other day. I was in the lift at work. A guy comes up to me, he's like, saw me laughing, right? So what are you listening to? I was like, myself. And then I walked off. And it was just like, I had a moment of realisation where I was like, that's not right. That's really not right. But I can't help it.
Cause I love the way it was. It wasn't even something funny that I was saying. It was one of your jokes.
It was one of my own jokes. I laughed myself. It's like, it's a talent in a way. Another talent I have. It's a talent to be able to listen to yourself and still be objective and enjoy myself.
That's
a weird thing. But anyway, I realise I've become so self-indulgent and narcissistic that I've just disappeared up my anus. So I'm going to come back out of my anus, have a wash, and then start presenting this show. Hello, people. Welcome to Bad Nostalgia, episode 4 of series 3. Tres, international. We're on Podomatic now, so you know we get the odd hit from somewhere further afield than Lincolnshire. It's pretty big.
France. 50 plays in France.
50. Well, 50 downloads.
And
about 0 plays. So I don't know what they're doing with it once they download it.
Well, they downloaded it. We're the ones here cashing in.
Exactly, mate.
Even though we don't get paid.
No money. No money. We pay out, if anything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The website hosts to make sure we're out there on iTunes.
Yes.
Yeah. God, this has just been an elaborate plug for the show so far. We've not done anything about this actual episode.
We haven't, no.
What film have we got this week, Pete? Please.
Mate,
Here we go.
Pinocchio.
Pin bloody oak. EO. Do you remember that, people? Do you remember that? No, you don't remember it that much, do you? I didn't remember it that much. I hadn't seen this film in I don't know how long.
Did you know? Well, we'll get into it later when it was made, but like, I thought this was a film from, you know, the same sort of era as, you know, The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, and I watched it at the same time that I used to watch them films.
Uh-huh.
This is a film that I saw, I think, really early. We're talking like before you can even string a sentence together. Yeah.
Possibly before you even started preschool.
Really, really early age, which made the whole thing so much more messed up.
If we're going to talk about the chronology, I mean, what we were saying last week is we've been working our way through up the years, haven't we? We've gone now, through the late 80s. We've gone right...
We've gone back to World War fucking 2.
We've gone to World War fucking 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we could have gone all the way back. And this is why we've got such a vague, vague memory of this one. It's because, for me in particular, because obviously I'm...
We weren't alive in 1940.
We weren't... Well, for a start, if you, well, let's state the obvious. We weren't alive.
We weren't alive.
I know you can't see us, guys, and it's just for those people who assume we are really young-sounding 90-year-olds. We weren't actually alive in 1940. I was minus... Can't even do it. I was willing to go there just so we could do the one-year gap joke, but I can't
45.
Do it. Minus 45?
Yeah.
What, I was born in 1985? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's actually quite easy math.
I was minus 46.
Minus 45. Oh, year.
Always that 1 year.
Year
even when we're going backwards.
Even negative.
Yeah.
Even sperm difference. Yeah.
Have we done a film that was filmed before we were born yet?
No.
Yeah, I'm sure we have.
No, we haven't. The Goonies was the nearest, but that was the mid-80s.
What was E.T.?
E.T., 82. I was 82. Minus 3, you were minus 2.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But this is old school.
This is serious old school.
Yeah.
Serious old school. And, I got such a vague memory of this because I was, like, about 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Pretty much when I last saw this film. So my memories of it are just, like... So vague,
yeah.
So vague. And rewatching it back for me now was just, it was, I don't know, I wasn't having specific things that were coming back to me, like things with The Little Mermaid, like literally lines and attraction towards Ursula, because, you know, proper predated having any kind of pubescent feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
It was more of an impulsive, instinctive kind of feeling I had when I rewatched it.
As well, we can talk about this because this isn't really to do with the film being messed up at all. I didn't realise that his nose getting bigger when he lies is such a small part of the film.
Tiny, tiny.
I thought that was the whole film.
Yeah, yeah, about just walking
about
around.
A boy who tells a lie and his nose gets bigger. That is like one little scene.
Did you think it was like he'd meet loads of people and
just
like,
lie.
Is he going to lie?
Yeah.
No.
But it's I thought that's what it was. That, you know, that's Pinocchio.
It's because it's so famous.
Yeah.
It's such a massive part of our popular culture. It's so iconic. That.
It might as well have not have been in the film.
Yeah,
you could
might
have,
as well.
You could have got up, gone for a piss, come back, and you wouldn't have known that was.
And you're like, "Where's the nose bit?"
Yeah, yeah.
What have I made that up? Is that from something else? Like, Saved by the Bell. I just really wanted to crowbar Saved by the Bell in there because I felt like we were getting too nostalgic. Right, so we've already started talking about this film nostalgically. So I don't know. We don't need to get any more admin out of the way, do we? Let's just crack on, shall we?
Yeah.
I did notice when I listened back to the last episode because. I always listened back to them, obviously, that the opening section lasted about half an hour last time, and we had hardly any time to talk about the film, because it was just us two wanking each other
So we had 15 minutes to talk about an hour and a half film.
Yeah, that's what happens when Michelle's not here. Got to let you know, people, I usually tell them at the beginning, Michelle's still not here. We wish her well. God bless
She's
her.
She's on the up, isn't she?
She's on the up.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just in the recovery period, but she will be back. Probably next week, if not the week after. We will catch her before the season is out.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously it's taken me almost 10 minutes to acknowledge the fact that she's not here, so, you know, I'm getting used to my knobs, but I will never be as good as Michelle.
No way.
So let's crack on with the nostalgia music and talk about Pinocchio back in the day when we were little babies. There we go. Yeah, we're on.
Seamless.
We'll be in the edit, mate.
So,
hit me.
I remember at the end of The Lion King last week, I said to you that I don't think I've ever seen Pinocchio, but I had, and the memories of it were so vague, a really, really early age, and all I can remember, mate, all I've really got is, like, I think I had this belief back then that your toys actually could come to life, and that's what happened when you weren't sort of there.
And that came from Pinocchio?
Yeah, and that
not
came from Pinocchio.
Story.
No, not from Toy Story. It came from, like, I remember checking when I was, because it was really, really young. I remember checking to see if my toys were, like, coming to life. I'd leave the room and then come back in. It was that early.
That young.
So yeah,
That's, like, really being mentally backwards.
Yeah.
For you to be that mentally unevolved, you must have been.
Yeah.
Really, really young.
Yeah.
Or on drugs.
And Yeah. And I wanted Jiminy Cricket, who I completely forgot about. I thought he was just, like, really cool, and I just wanted... I wanted, like, an imaginary friend like him. I could have had an imaginary friend. I could have just imagined one. But those are the only two things I remember. That's how vague it is.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the... I mean, we're going to get onto this big time a bit later, but I remember the sinister, dark aspect of things because those bits really stayed with me, but in such a vague way that it was kind of just like I had this weird, uncanny feeling when I saw it. It just reminded me of, like, a nightmare rather than the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And it made me realise that secondhand... That nightmare, that feeling of the familiar fear, originally came from Pinocchio, but I kind of forgotten it over time.
Right.
And I was like, wow, this is actually, this has stayed with me so much, but it happened such a long time ago that I can't place it specifically, but I know that this is the source of where that particular fear came from. So it obviously, it happened to me such a young age that I don't have, like, a conscious memory of it. I just, it's kind of more of an instinctive, ah. Oh,
yeah,
vibe.
Yeah.
And to think that a film has done that to me at the age of about 2 or 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Says a lot. It also reflects on why this film is so fucking perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that we've never had a film that's aimed so young and been so disturbing. At
yeah,
the same time.
Yeah.
I just, it's like having Sesame Street say, let's teach you how to count to 3. 1, 2, I'm going to fuck your mum, 3.
If I'd have known about this film, Series 3 would have just been the Pinocchio series. Honestly, it wouldn't have been the Disney series. It
we were
would
saying
have
that
just
before,
been,
weren't we? That we could have done a whole series on Pinocchio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because my golly gosh, there is some stuff here.
Yeah,
There's the opening, there's the setup, the premise, which is out there,
to say
the least. Then the journey, which is gets weirder and darker, and then it tops itself. And then we've got a conclusion, which is just beyond...
Which is like biblical.
Biblical, yeah. Of biblical proportions.
Yes.
Biblical content.
Yeah.
Right, so anything else with the nostalgia?
I think we should both shut up, mate, and get on with it, because we've got so much to talk about.
We have.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And to be honest, we don't remember anything from it. So
yeah.
Let's
yeah, pretty much.
Straight the barrel, shall we? Right, okay, so all those people out there who can remember it, can't remember it, whatever, just love listening to us, do listen to the trailer, and then, you know, let's get a bit more modern after that, please. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the master showman, that's me, Potuto Rivaldo, and by special permission of the management, is presenting to you the one and only Pinocchio.
I got no strings, no major.
When Walt Disney gave you his first full-length feature, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs became a nation's friend. You made Dopey the star of his day, and Hi-Ho your favorite song. And now Walt Disney brings you his first and only full-length feature since Snow White. Which one of this grand new group of characters will be your favorite? Will it be mischievous little Pinocchio himself? Will it be Geppetto, the kindly old woodcarver? Will it be fluttery, frivolous Cleo, the goldfish? Or will it be roly-poly Figaro? Might be those wily crooks, J. Worthington Foulfellow and Raggle-Taggle Gideon. Or perhaps Stromboli, the gypsy-like puppet master. Will it be the villainous coachman? Will it be Lampwick, the tough little boy your folks never wanted you to play with? Or will it be Monstro the Whale, the biggest, noisiest character ever to come to the screen? Or will it be Jiminy Cricket, the only conscience with a sense of humor?
Woohoo! And always let your conscience be your guide.
How old school was that trailer?
Yeah, man.
That just transported me right back to a time where I was not even a speck in my grandfather's cock.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, that was beautiful. That was like that was a nice kind of warm cloak of nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Being cradled in as a newborn.
Yeah.
Oh, that was just beautiful. That was really nice. Even though everyone who voiced those sounds were probably really racist.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, you go for it, Pete. You hit us with a synopsis.
Okay. So, the narrator of the story is a cricket. Okay. Called a Jiminy Cricket. He is a cricket, right?
He is a cricket.
Now, he goes into a toy shop, and there's an old man there called Geppetto who is making a puppet called Pinocchio. And he's making this wooden puppet. He makes loads of great toys. And before he goes to bed one night, he wishes that Pinocchio would become a real boy. Okay. We don't know why he wants a little boy running around. We'll get into that later. Mm-hmm. That night, a fairy turns up. Okay, and grants his wish and turns Pinocchio into a living, a sort of breathing puppet. Okay, and she says to him, "You can be a real boy." So he's a puppet that's alive at the moment, but you can be a real boy, an actual real human.
Oh wow!
If you go a certain amount of time without giving in to your conscience, is that right?
Yeah. If you're brave. And
yeah,
truthful and unselfish.
And unselfish, okay. So he has to then go out into the world and be all of those things, and then he can wish can be granted, and he can become a real boy. And so his first day when he goes out, he gets kidnapped by a fox, which takes him to the theatre and parades him around and humiliates him. And then one of the actors at the theatre then goes, "Oh, I can make some money off this boy." So he takes him on a ship, and then he's like, "Right, you're coming on tour with me, and I'm taking you everywhere because you're a puppet." Mm-hmm. Right, okay. You're a puppet that's like alive with no strings, which, everyone will love. It's really weird, even though there's a fucking fox, you know, walking around and talking in a cricket.
Keep it moving.
Right, okay. So it takes away.
The look of genuine disbelief on Pete's face as he's saying this. Brilliant. Keep it moving, mate.
Okay. There's a scene where the foxes, who originally kidnapped him, are talking to this old man who says, "I know a place called Pleasure Island where I can take this boy, and I take all the other naughty boys there." Okay. So he takes him to Pleasure Island with all these other, like, sort of, you know, Asbo kids, and they go to this place where they sort of misbehave, and it turns out that the place that they're actually taking the boys to, they're turning them into donkeys,
yep,
okay, and then selling them off to salt mines,
yes,
and things like that. Pinocchio sort of gets turned into a half... This is not how I remember this film at all. Pinocchio gets turned into a half donkey.
Keep us going.
He gets turned into a half donkey, Pinocchio, and escapes with Jiminy Cricket, and then somehow gets a note saying his dad's been swallowed by a whale, mm-hmm, right? He then goes and rescues his dad from the whale. He gets vomited out of the whale. Everyone thinks he's dead, and then he gets turned into a real boy and comes back to life.
The end. Thank you very much. To be fair, I was saying move on, but there's a hell of a lot of plot points, and you covered every single beat in the film. So
right.
Thank you very much there, Pete. You should be very proud of yourself. You didn't leave a thing out there, to be honest. In fact, we might as well wrap up.
Yeah.
But no, that was good. That right. So we've been speaking for about 20 minutes now. We're going to slam it down and tear it a new bumhole. Let's do it. Feel good about this, Pete. I've been waiting for this moment. Where do we start? Where the fuck do we start with Pinocchio, 1940 classic that is in the public consciousness across the globe, but when you actually revisit it, oh really, wow, fuck me.
The start of it reminded me of the song, like, when you wish upon a star. It reminded me of like the start of the Green Mile or the Shawshank Redemption. You know, that sort of like, I think it has no place in a kids' film at all. It's really weird.
It suggests a lot of bleakness and hopelessness.
The Great Depression.
To the point where you're wishing upon a star.
Yeah.
It's like you've obviously given up hope of trying to work for something, looking for some luck from somewhere else. Mummy and daddy giving you a fiver. If you sat there and you're like, I'll just wish upon a star then. It's like, things are looking pretty bleak.
It's from that bleak era where people, you know, the war, and people just had absolutely like nothing, didn't they? That's what it is.
So what would you do? You didn't even have the national lottery. You just, just put, hedge your bets on a star, mate.
Yeah,
and sing about it.
Yeah.
Right? And then the first scene, we've got Jiminy Cricket. We like to kick things off with a very, very opening scene. Jiminy Cricket, our little conscious person, is the little insect who's effectively squatting in Geppetto's house.
What is he doing? He's
homeless and poor. Like,
and he's wandering
else.
Around the streets like some fucking Jack the Ripper, like at midnight, and then breaks into a toy shop.
He breaks into a toy shop in Geppetto's house, and he's like, oh, this will do. He's effectively squats in Geppetto's house.
Yeah, yeah.
And freeloads off him.
Yeah.
So that's our central character. The moral compass of the film is a squatter.
And he's basically really pervy as well. Have you seen all the little pervy moments in the film?
No, I didn't pick up on this. Like the fish. Because that fish is weirdly sexualized. Did you not notice that? Geppetto's pet fish has got these big, gorgeous eyelashes and she's got these puckered up lips. And it's a fish. I'm like, why are you sexualizing the fish in the opening scene?
And why is the fish in love with the cat as well? Something that clearly wants to kill it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got all these like human characteristics, all these inanimate objects slash pets. And it's just, it doesn't sit right with me. This whole opening sequence, and Geppetto as well, he surrounds himself in these mute animals who we later find out weirdly don't have to be mute because there's a talking fox later on.
Yeah.
Which makes the animals then seem like they're some sort of fucking bunch of they're slaves or something being kept by Geppetto or something.
Yeah.
Because, like, animals are walking around with coats on and talking and then... Yeah, in Geppetto's house, they're all kind of looking after him and eating off the floor and shit.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just there's all sorts of stuff going on.
It's
in
really
this
bizarre.
Sequence.
But no, there's a lot of there's about three or four bits in the film where Jiminy Cricket where he sees a woman and he gets like a monocle out and then puts it on, and then when the fairy godmother the fairy appears, he looks at the camera and goes. Like, he turns into, like, Chris Rock for a second. And he looks at the camera when the fairy goes and goes,
Why does he always pick up on these things?
He does. He's do like, that's some nice fairy pussy. That's what he does. He goes,
Definitely says that. And then you've got your Geppetto in the opening bit, who's, like, his toy son, who he's playing with.
What happened, mate?
What happened to his life? Because he wants his toy to become a real boy and he wishes upon a star. And then it's like, great, we accept that as the fairy tale. He wants the wooden boy, because he's a toy maker, to become a real boy. But then you've got to question, why doesn't he conceive naturally?
Yeah, yeah.
What's wrong? Did you pick on that? You start questioning.
Yeah.
What's going on with this guy? He's a toy maker. Make your toys and sell it. It's like, I want them to be real.
Yeah.
Like, mate, you have a dick. Yes, you've got a dick. Why don't you find a lady, charm her, settle down with her, and create a boy? What's going on there? So I'm starting to speculate. I've had a couple of potential reasons why he has to do this.
Okay.
Firstly, he has low sperm count.
Okay.
Low sperm count, okay. Is he toy maker? The nearest he gets to a little boy, he makes them. Fair enough, you make that jump.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's from a messed up family background, so he doesn't want to go there. He doesn't want to have to conceive naturally.
Yeah.
And if you've noticed, Geppetto's eyes are really close together. Maybe he's a product of incest. So there's all these different theories that there's evidence for it. There. Did this strike you as bloody odd?
Yeah, yeah. I was just more concerned about just why he wanted. To create a little boy, because if you were a lonely old man, you know, and you were hoping that something you created came to life, why would you make a tiny little boy? Why not make like a really fit wooden supermodel? Do you know what I mean? Why is he made like a little boy? Oh, I know why. Because he's probably a pedo.
That is such a good idea. Yeah, because whatever he makes is the manifestation of what he wants to interact with, what he wants from life, and out of everything. If it was me and I was that lonely and I was talking to my cat and talking to my fucking fish who's really sexy,
then
the only thing I would be... I'd just be wanking all the time.
Yeah.
And if I was wanking all the time, I swear down I would be, the manifestation of what I wanted would be, like you say, a really hot woman. That is a very good point.
Yeah. I think, did he have a son that died? Why hasn't he got any grandkids at all? What is going on with him?
He's obviously doing all right for himself, the fact he can afford all these source materials to make all this stuff.
But why? No one's buying his toys.
No one's buying it.
His toy shop's full of toys. You can't move for fucking toys.
Yeah.
Like, they're everywhere.
No one's buying his stock at all. You do not see him interact with the public in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then he wishes upon the star, and then the fairy godmother grants the wish whilst he's half asleep in bed, wanking, obviously.
Yeah.
Sorry, I always have to lower the tone, don't I? Such an interesting philosophical, intellectual discussion. I have to throw the word wank in there.
Before they go off to bed as well, in the opening scene, all the clocks go off at 9 o'clock, and we're given all these weird different like clocks that have these mechanisms, like when the when it's on each stroke, like there's a man with an axe trying to chop a like a turkey's head off, and then there's this mum with her son bent over a lap with his pants pulled down and she's spanking his bum, like, as well.
Really?
Did you notice that?
I was
expecting like one of the clocks to just be a man wanking on each stroke. Like,
there we go. Fantastic, of course.
Since you mentioned wanking.
Yeah. And then the boy comes alive, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We see him as the wooden version of Pinocchio. He's now moving and talking. He's conscious all of a sudden, right? And this, I had such an issue with this bit. Pinocchio, the first things he says is, I can move. I can talk. I've got an issue with that.
Yeah.
If this was the first time he was alive in any way... He would be like saying, Mama, Dada. He would be like figuring shit out. The fact that the first thing he says is, oh, thank God, I can finally move. I can finally talk. So what? Before, he had a conscious mind.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't speak or move. This is a 6-year-old paraplegic, right? Who's finally been cured. I don't want to have to think of Pinocchio that way. But that is totally... He's just been sat there suffering in silence.
He's essentially got, like, motor neurons disease.
Essentially.
That's what it's had.
Yeah. So what are we supposed to think as a child? That every single toy we see, unless it's walking around and talking, it is fucking Christopher Reeve.
Yeah. They're just trapped. God. We need to do an ice bucket challenge for Pinocchio. That's what we need to do. It's just like, I've got the exact same note down here. I've just put like, yeah, was he just paralysed inside the body and couldn't do anything?
Is that why his dad took him for walks?
Yeah.
To help him, make him feel like, make him simulate
Well, that's why they're all on strings like all the time, because they're just, yeah.
To help them get some exercise.
They've got like...
Take them for walks.
Oh, it's so dark.
It's really, really dark.
Yeah.
They did not need to do that. And then the fairy godmother, who is just like a wolf in sheep's clothing, she's based on a model of the day, and she's absolutely gorgeous.
Who's she based on?
I think I've written it down for the trivia bit later, but she's beautiful, isn't she? She's an absolute goddess.
But she's like a real... She's as close as you can get as having a real person edited in. But than being a cartoon, like, back in that day.
Back in that day, yeah.
It's really,
she's
really weird.
She's based on a real person, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just beautiful and really angelic and all that kind of stuff. But she, if you think about it, right, she says everything in a lovely way, but if you think about the content of what she's saying, it's really fucked up throughout the whole film as well. She's really consistently fucked
up.
Like, she says to him, she says, you can become a real boy eventually if you are brave, truthful and unselfish. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is lovely parable. It's lovely metaphor for young children becoming really well behaved, and then they'll be rewarded. This is such a great message for kids, blah blah blah. But you get on later on in the film, which we're going to get to later, Pinocchio is probably the most lovely, Swedish, noble child, noble character in the whole film, from the beginning. Why the fuck does he have to prove himself when he bumps into people who try and exploit him, put him on the stage and perform for money, trap him in cages, send him to a boar stall, throw him in a fucking whale? And so, like, all these people who do, everyone else in the film is evil, yet this fairy godmother has the cheek to go up to him and say, if you're brave, truthful and unselfish, I might think about not killing you. It's like, fuck me. He's the loveliest child.
Yeah. And he's been paralysed for God knows how long.
God knows how
just
long.
Inside his little wooden body. Just make him a real boy. Why not make him a real boy and just say, you know, if you're not all these things, if you're not brave and selfish, then I'll turn you back into a puppet. He's fucking suffered enough.
Imagine if you've been paralysed for the first day of your life, up until the age of 6, suddenly you were not paralysed and not mute anymore. You, on that first day, would you think, I think I might go walk down to the park for a bit? You're about to leave the house, someone says, no. Prove yourself, otherwise, back to paralysis. Fuck you! Oh, horrible, horrible.
And it's sort of like this weird moral tale as well. The fact that he has to rely on his conscience, and it's like everyone's conscience is different. Like, what's bad to him might not be bad to someone else as well.
Yeah.
And why do they make Jiminy Cricket
why is he?
His conscience? Why don't they make him, like, Geppetto? Do you know what I mean? A lovely old man.
Who's lived his life.
Yeah.
The squatter cricket.
The fairy turns up and says, we've granted Geppetto's wish because he's such a lovely man. Okay, that's why. Well, why not make him his fucking compass then? Why put a kid through that?
Such a lovely man. He's building loads of paralysed children. Yeah. He's not a lovely man. A Jiminy Cricket, I know what you're saying. Why is he selected to be the conscience? The first song he sings is Give a Little Whistle, which is essentially saying, if you do something wrong, then just whistle.
Yeah.
Cheers, mate. Kill someone, whistle. Just this whole thing about projecting your conscience onto another being, like that could backfire in so many ways. Like the Pinocchio is dark, but it could have been so much darker.
Yeah.
It could have been like, oh yes, I did kill that innocent woman. It's because my conscience was asleep.
Yeah.
It's just like it really could have been so much darker. A cricket as well. What kind of information about life lessons is a cricket going to impart on a little kid?
Well, this is that song is fucked up. This is what I've got.
Is this what it's based
on? Yeah, this is what it's based on.
Timing. This is perfect timing. Do not let me tread on your toes. Here we go, people.
That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up. That song is fucked up.
Hit me, Pete.
So I'm doing something a bit different this week. So I'm going to be talking about the song, but I'm not going to be going through it lyric by lyric. I'm just going to talk about it like...
More paraphrase.
Just talk about it as a whole, really, and how messed up the song is in context of the film. So the song is as follows. When you get into trouble and you don't know right from wrong, give a little whistle, give a little whistle. When you meet temptation and the urge is very strong, give a little whistle, give a little whistle. Not just a little squeak, pucker up and blow. And if your whistle's weak, yell Jimmy Cricket. And it goes on, you know, if take the straight and narrow path, give a little whistle. But we're talking earlier, it's just so messed up because, like you were saying, his conscience is a cricket. And this is a cricket as well that at the start of the film was roaming around down back alleys, like murdering women, breaking into toy shops or whatever he was doing. And
they
talk about, temptation and how he's got to rely on his conscience. And as I was saying earlier, everyone's conscience is different. So, you know, if he's grown up with like Geppetto fondling him every 5 minutes, he's going to think that's the norm. That's what his conscience is going to be like. And also, how evil does the fairy know that all this evil stuff is actually going to happen to him?
I know, because she's like... she's a special higher power. So
yeah.
I'm thinking that I can she imagine, probably does.
I can imagine if the puppet that Geppetto made was like 19 years old. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They brought him to life and he was like, you know, and she knew that he was going to go, you know, on a gap year like to Thailand and there's going to be some unconscious like tranny in his bed and he was going to have to try not to sleep with her. Yeah. Like, you know, test his conscience then, not when he's a kid. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's awful. And also...
Is the sex tourism industry quite developed in 1940? I don't think the surgery was invented, was it? Pretty sure it was post-World War II when they worked out how to do that.
And basically, his conscience is a cricket. And if you look at the animal kingdom, there's probably a high chance that, you know, crickets probably reproduce through gang rape.
Yeah.
And that's his conscience.
I mean, have you looked into what crickets actually are? I mean, what kind of conscience advice are you going to get from a cricket?
Are they even an animal or are they a plant? What are they?
It's an insect.
Yeah.
It's that insect that lies on its back and rubs its legs together. That's a cricket, isn't it? Or that's a grasshopper. But they're very close and closely aligned, I think. This is usually at this point where Rosie is listening in and she's like, Lewis, what the fuck? I always get my animal facts wrong and I pretend I don't. I just carry on with it. So I'm just going to leave that one for now. But that was a beautiful point, that, mate. Is that your song is fucked up bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful.
That's it.
Lovely. Right, so I think this is a very good time to have a little segue and talk to you about the second half of the film, even though we've only actually covered the first 15 minutes. Speak to you soon, people.
Alger. Oh, it's that Aladdin's hit the bottom.
He's become the one that rides in crime. I blame parents, except he hasn't got 'em.
We'll ruin your childhood.
We flipping well will ruin your childhood. We're doing quite a good job of it so far. Do follow us at Bad Nostalge. No I and A at the end of it. At Bad Nostalge. Followers, we want you. We want to grow. Right, so... Okay, so he's left the house.
So he's left the house and he's embarking on
this mission to find spiritual and moral enlightenment so he can become flesh and bone.
Yeah.
And essentially we've established that this story is a morality tale about how an amoral six-year-old can attempt to gain a sense of right and wrong.
When he knows nothing about the world and he's going into it made of wood.
Yeah. And I can't help but feel that with this story, it's influenced by it, and it does influence other very well-known stories that are in the public consciousness. The way he goes off and embarks on this journey of self-discovery and spiritual enlightenment, but ends up getting captured and sent towards this area of absolute exploitation of his body on stage.
Yeah.
It's essentially the plot of Showgirls. He is Elizabeth Berkeley, but maybe without the pool scene.
Is that why you bought up Saved by the Bell?
Maybe, yeah, because it's flying around in the back of my head. So there's the two films. I feel like it's influenced by the Elephant Man story, and it has influenced Showgirls with Elizabeth Berkley, 1996, Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah, but Elizabeth Berkley in Showgirls, you know, she had a choice. Didn't she?
This is like
sex trafficking, basically, isn't it? The Pinocchio is just captured, and they look at him and they're like, "Oh, he's a freak. We can make some money out of him."
Yeah, it's actually like it's a higher form of exploitation than in Showgirls, because, like you say, there's some sort of consent about it. She loves to get her tits out. She likes having sex. Great. She looks great. She earns lots of money. He earns no money, so it's slavery for one.
Yeah,
he is on stage. I mean, it would be less offensive if he just stood on stage and took his clothes off and showed his wooden thing, right? Because what ends up happening is he does that performance where he's dancing without strings, and everyone's getting off on it. Like, oh god. Ooh, he's dancing without strings. Oh, what a freak. Ugh. And then what ends up happening is he ends up dancing amongst the other puppets who are on strings. And given what Pinocchio's all about, is that it's like he's a conscious puppet. He's dancing with these puppets who are on strings, with these wide, dead-behind-the-eyes eyes. It's essentially like he's dancing amongst corpses.
Oh, it's my God, it is, isn't it?
It's so sinister. And they're all playing.
And they're all like burlesque, like puppets as well, aren't they? Yeah.
And they're moving only because they're attached to these strings. Other people are making them move. Other people are physically moving these corpses around Pinocchio, who's the only one that's alive. It's so disturbing.
But they're not even corpses. They're all just like, they're all just puppets that basically have like locked-in syndrome.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because they can't move inside. They're all alive inside it. Yeah.
They're all like loads of Christopher Reeves's being populated around the stage with people holding his arm. Like, oh, look, I'm Superman! It's just like, it's fucked up, mate. It's so sick. And then he gets thrown into a cage by his slave master, this really disturbing guy. He's Italian or something.
Yeah, yeah. And he takes all the money, he puts him in a cage, and he says, like, I'm taking you around the world and showing you to everyone. I'm going to, like, parade you in front of everyone, like we're going everywhere.
Yeah.
And this is apparently Pinocchio's fault because he was meant to rely on his conscience. I'm sorry, but if Pinocchio did say to this massive 7-foot fat guy who's got an axe, no.
Yeah.
Do you think he'd go, oh, all right then, mate, I'll take you back home? Do you know what I mean? What the fuck's he meant to do?
He'd become wood burning, kind of fire burning wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is such a good point. And he gets lost in the cage, and he's working as a slave now. And then he does escape because the fairy godmother, she comes down at first before she releases him. She chastises him, doesn't she?
She says,
look, this is your test. You're failing the test so far. I'm like, fuck you.
He doesn't even know that that's wrong. Yeah. Two foxes stopping him in the street and going, I'm taking you to the theatre. Yeah. He's not going to go, oh, no. That's against my conscience. No.
What she's saying, he's not being brave. He's just danced with 20 corpses on a stage in front of, like, 30 beer-swiggling fucking pedos. It's just, like, sick. It's like, how braver could he be? Right, and then, so he escapes thanks to her help. Oh, thank you very much. And then he gets captured again.
Yeah.
And the stakes get raised even higher this time.
Yeah.
He's sent off to what is essentially a borstal for young offenders.
Yeah, yeah. There's a really creepy bit in the film that there's this guy talking to the two, talking to the fox who originally captured him. And he says, oh, I've got an idea what we can do with him. I collect little boys and then I take, and he goes, and do you want to know what I do with them? And the guy goes, yeah. And he whispers something in his ear for about like 10 seconds. And then moves back and goes, and then I take them to Pleasure Island.
Oh, is that what it's called, Pleasure Island?
That's what it's called, mate, Pleasure Island. Oh, and this is a place where they take kids.
What do they do at Pleasure Island, Pete?
Well, they encourage kids to do really bad things, like smoke, trash things, pick fights, right? And these are like little kids. Like, and they're well up for it, like, as soon as they get yeah. there. That's not what little kids... Like, I can imagine if, like... Like, it would have been a different story if they'd gone to Pleasure Island and all the kids did is just eat sweets all day yeah. and rotted their teeth, do you know what I mean? And just played video games all day and got square eyes. But no, they're taking them to, like, places, like, where they can... a place where they can just kick the shit out of people.
Smoke, drink. Shit, rush everything.
Yeah. That's not what little kids want to do.
And they're, like, toddler age.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So sinister as fuck. And then you've obviously got the bit with the donkeys.
That this bit is just absolutely... like crazy.
It's like something out of a David Cronenberg film. It's yeah. like watching it reminded the me fly.
Of, it reminded me of Willow. You know where they all turn into pigs?
Yes, it is like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Willow, it's like The Fly, and it's like Alien. It's like proper body horror shit. Like you're watching someone's body, and you're watching it kind of mutate into something you don't want it to mutate into.
Yeah.
Or kind of trapped. That's almost like claustrophobia, because they can't run anywhere. They're trapped in their own yeah. bodies. It's so disgusting yeah. to see those like donkey ears sprout off its head.
Yeah.
And they get turned into a donkey.
Yeah.
No one wants to get turned into a donkey.
Because when I was first watching it, and there was that scene in the tavern where the guy was saying, you know, I collect little boys and then I take them to Pleasure Island and they never come back. I was thinking like, oh God, what's he doing? Is he abusing them and then murdering them? Is that why they never come back? Is there something sexual here? So he's really fucked up. And then when they go to Pleasure Island and they're all just, you know, they're all just fucking about, and then they actually get turned into donkeys and then get sold off to be slaves in salt mines. I was thinking, like, do you know what? It would have been better if they were raped and murdered. It really, really would. My original thought, I think it actually would have been better than turned into a donkey and then sold off to a salt mine.
And live your whole life as a donkey.
Yeah, yeah.
Slavery.
But why donkeys?
Who knows what was going on behind that? I don't know. It was adapted from an Italian fable or something, wasn't it? But we're going to get
to it. Was it because it would have been more... It would have been worse if they were just kids who they made slaves, so they couldn't put the kids inside the little wooden things and then take them to the salt mines. They thought, oh, we'll turn them into donkeys, and so that'll be like a little bit comical.
It's like smuggling the children within a different body to get away with being child slavery or something. Oh, I don't know. Oh, you know,
I can't believe we're talking about Pinocchio, mate.
It's the mind of a sinister motherfucker, is what.
Yeah.
And then somehow he escapes, but even when he escapes, you know, there's no respite. He's still a donkey.
Yeah.
So what's he going to do? What's the best case scenario is he's going to live on a farm, but he's still a fucking donkey. Right, and then he gets back to his dad, and his dad's not there because his dad's gone looking for him. He's embarked on a voyage to find him. But then he gets this weird letter from some really amazing post office service saying, yes, this is a letter from your dad. And then he reads the letter, and it says, "Dear Pinocchio, I looked for you, but I got lost. Now I'm in a whale with the cat and the fish." And I'm just thinking, right, firstly, amazing post office system. and secondly, I went looking for you with the fish and the pet cat. Stag do, mate. You're in the fucking stag do. Ended up, woke up. We've all done this, you know. Like you said before, you go to Thailand.
Yeah.
You find a tranny. You get wasted off opium. You wake up in a whale. That's pretty much what happened there.
Yeah.
So then he has to go on another mission now to get his invalid grandfather. And then you've got the whole massive sequence inside the whale, which is when it just gets new levels of trippy fuck now.
Yeah, like, yeah.
They're inside this massive whale, aren't they? And Geppetto, you know, he doesn't quite mind because he's quite senile. And then Pinocchio's like, no, I've got to be brave. We have to fight, get our way out of this whale. And then I'm thinking, right, what nice little Disney-friendly ways are they going to get out of the whale? Oh, are they going to tickle it and make it kind of sneeze them out? And he's like, no, let's light a fire and burn this motherfucker from within. And I don't know about you, but it lost my interest at this point. It lost my sympathy, should I say.
Yeah.
Because you've got a whale, which is a miracle of... a natural miracle, an endangered species, an amazing thing, right? I would rather see the whale survive rather than a really sinister, senile old man and a piece of talking wood survive, to be honest. I'm rooting for the whale at this point.
I am. It's like face was on fire in it. Yeah. They started a fire inside the whale so he could choke them out. It's like you were saying, tickle him. It's a Disney film. It's a bit of tickling in a Disney film. That's fine.
Sing a song.
Yeah, yeah.
Sing a song and make him smile and then crawl out through the gaps in his teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Fucked. Right, so... we've done ourselves a bit of a Willow today, haven't we? We're getting bogged down in, like, how sinister this film is.
It really is, mate.
So let's have another segue, and then we're going to do film trivia time. See you soon, people.
Nostalgia.
Bambi. Bambi, come here. Look. New spring grass.
And we're back. Beautiful. Very, very dark episode with a very dark segue. So, I think it's now time for a bit of film trivia, Peter.
Film trivia time.
Film trivia time indeed. Do follow us at Bad Nostalgia. Right, I don't know if you've got much for this, Pete. I found a few things myself.
Yeah,
you got a few things?
Yeah.
Beautiful. I just want to kick it off with a little joke I thought of before, actually. The film didn't do very well at the box office.
Yeah.
And it was in 1940, so wartime. So it quite literally was a box office bomb.
I genuinely just laughed at that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It's just your face. Pointless for the radio. A box office bomb.
A box office bomb. Just imagine my face, everyone.
A fantastic denouement.
Thank you, mate. Denouement.
Yes.
We've got French listeners now as well. They actually understand. That's the only word they understand.
They've downloaded it. They haven't listened to it.
Yeah, that's obviously. Yeah. Right, first point for trivia.
Okay, so the voice of Geppetto...
This is the best piece of trivia I've found.
The voice of Geppetto was a guy called Christian Rubb, and during the filming of it, when they were doing other voices, it was revealed that he was actually a Nazi sympathiser. Okay, and he drove the cast absolutely like crazy
by praising Hitler. All the time. And it's not even like World War II was in retrospect at that point. It was during World War II, when the Germans were doing really well.
Yeah, yeah.
So a proper goose stepping guy recording the voice of Geppetto whilst they're filming it.
And this
is really, oh god.
And people's reactions to it. This is what's so much stuff. People's reaction to it back then. It can't even have been that extreme. It must have been someone talking about Nigel Farage. Like now, because what happened was there was a live action shot that they had to do with the actor, okay, right. And he was on sort of like a makeshift stage, like a moving stage. It was the bit where they were out at sea, and so the cast, in order to for the cast to get their own back on him for having all these Nazi views and for talking about Hitler all the time, do you know what they did to get their own back on him?
Why? What?
They shook the stage, so he wobbled. To get even with him. That's what they did to get even with a Nazi sympathiser.
Thank you.
And it's written down in here like it's this little like jovial thing that the cast did to get their own back. That's like someone came, you see this guy over here, he's got really bad racist views. He wants to bring back slavery. Oh really? What did you do? Did you challenge his views? No, we threw a custard pie at him. That's what we did.
Just a little harmful armchair kind of racist.
Yeah.
He's supporting a regime that kind of mass murdered lots of people.
And he's not even sacked. He's continued to work. Sacked. Yeah, yeah.
He just gets teased.
Yeah, he just gets teased.
Oh, shitting hell. Nice one. Cheers, America. Thanks for that. Wobble his table. That'll show the Nazi regime. And then in 1993, the Playboy magazine, I love it how Playboy magazine did this, they cited 43 instances of violence and other unfavourable behaviour in the film, including 23 instances of battery, 9 acts of property damage, 3 slang uses of the word jackass, 3 acts of violence involving animals, 2 bits of male nudity, and 1 instance of implied death. Thank you, Playboy.
Since when a Playboy the moral compass?
I don't know.
What is that all about?
Was that feature like written on someone's anus? Like, it's just like, how do they kind of reconcile the two things of being like self-righteous and showing lots of fannies? I don't really understand how they can do both things at the same time. But interesting. Thank you for that, Playboy. Maybe that should be a regular bit, Playboy. So in the original novel, Pinocchio is cold and he's a horrible little shit, which kind of makes more sense with the moral story, doesn't it? Like, if he's an evil crap when he first wakes up and starts talking, then the film can show him going this character arc of becoming a good boy and going through trials and tribulations and coming out kind of all righteous and everything. But he starts out being really lovely, so that's why it kind of doesn't quite make sense.
I read this, and I read that, like, in the actual original novel, Pinocchio ends up killing Jiminy Cricket with a mallet.
Yeah.
That's what ends up. I think what happens, I think the novel's probably, it's a much longer story. So my theory is, I think Pinocchio probably, you know, ends up getting like quite a bit older, and you know, he's like trying to have his first wank or whatever, and like then Jiminy Cricket turns up like, give a little whistle, and he just kills him with a mallet. Like, mate, I'm trying to crack one off, just fuck off.
That's probably what that song was originally about, to be honest. It would make more sense.
Give a little whistle.
Give a little whistle, mate. Do you ever do a little whistle when you do that? Do you ever whistle when you right, so we're gonna have a quick final segue unless we've got any more bits of trivia to bring to the table.
No, mate, that's it from me.
I'm all spent
mate. Knackered. I'm all whistled out
mate. So final segue, and then we're gonna do our final summary. You guys are lovely. I've really enjoyed talking to you tonight. Stay tuned.
Bad nostalgia.
Look, Simba, everything the light touches is our kingdom.
And this will all be mine?
Everything.
Everything the light touches. What about that shadowy place?
That's beyond our borders. You must never go there, Simba.
We'll ruin your childhood.
We will ruin your childhood. That's why we're bloody here, mate. And we've had Pinocchio this week. It's gone by incredibly quickly. I feel barely had a chance to breathe. Let alone think. Just being immersed in all this sadistic crap. Right, so out of five, violence. What do you think, Pete? Hit me.
I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay, I'm going to give it a 4. I'm going to give it a 4, just for all the slavery and aggression and stuff like that. Horror.
Got to be a 5.
Me too, 5. I just don't know how much more you could crank up the horror in a kids' film. I really don't. Sex.
Jiminy Cricket is a bit of a perv. There's a few. I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay, I'm going to give it a 2. And okay. Morality. As in, how messed up is the morality? How on its head is it?
It's got to be a 5, mate.
I'm giving it a 4. Yeah, pretty high. So, anything for racial bonus points? I don't really get anything there.
What nationality is the guy kidnaps him meant to be?
The one who wants to kill him, the first guy.
Are they all like Russians or something?
Well, I think it's an Italian fable. So I can only assume if someone's got a bit of an accent, then they're actually Italian.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So,
well, just by the fact that I thought it was Russian, it was meant to be Italian, I'm going to give it a 3.
3? That's like quite high.
That is quite high.
Okay, you go for it, mate.
Okay.
So I got 4, 8.
I'm doing it on my phone, by the way, mate. 13, that's what I'm doing here.
15. I think I've got a 15. Actually, no, I'm going to give it a racial as well. 16. Right, what if you give it?
I have got 19.
19. Well, this is easily a series high so far. That's going to take a lot to beat. We're only midway through the series, though. We've got 3 more episodes left.
We have.
And I'm very looking forward to doing all of them with you guys. Thanks so much for listening. I've really enjoyed myself. Have you enjoyed yourself today?
It's been great, mate. It's been amazing. Depressing, but amazing.